Good evening. I'm Jessica Marpy, welcoming you to this live event. I'd like to thank everyone for taking time this evening to join us. Tonight, Senator Vincent Hughes of the 7th Senate District will take your calls as he discusses what's next for funding our public schools. Senator Hughes will be joined by Deborah Gordon-Claire, Executive Director at the Education Law Center, and Reginald Streeter, President of the Philadelphia School Board. If you have a question at any point this evening, please press star 3 on your keypad to participate. Again, star 3 to submit a question to our senator and guest tonight. Without any further delay, let's welcome State Senator Vincent Hughes.
Great. Thank you, Jessica. Good evening and welcome, everyone. This is State Senator Vincent Hughes. Welcome to this telephone town hall for my friends and neighbors within the 7th Senatorial District. I'd like to thank everyone who's taking time out of their busy schedule to participate in tonight's call. Whether you ask a question or just prefer to listen to the conversation, I really appreciate your engagement. Remember this, if you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's conversation, press star 3 on your phone. I'm going to say that a couple times. If you'd like to ask a question at any time during tonight's conversation, press star 3 on your phone. Press star 3 if you'd like to ask a question. As Jessica said, tonight we'll be discussing education funding and how a landmark Commonwealth Court decision has opened the door to new, needed investments in our public schools. For those of you who don't know, last year the Commonwealth Court ruled that Pennsylvania's school funding formula is unconstitutional, inadequate, and must be reformed. Since then, some additional investments have been allocated to struggling school districts in the Commonwealth, but so much more needs to be done. So much more. And again, if you have a question, please press star 3. Star 3. To help in our conversation, we'll be joined by two leaders on this extremely important subject. And I want to be clear, this is the civil rights issue of our time. The funding of education is the civil rights issue of our time. It is the civil rights issue of our time. And we've had to bring some experts in to this conversation to help us navigate this and for tonight's conversation to ask questions and to provide some direction on how everyone can get involved in this issue. Because everyone should be involved in this issue because every community, every neighborhood, deserves to have great schools. And the only way that every school can be a great school is that if we have the appropriate constitutional and adequate funding to make it happen. That's what the Commonwealth Court ruled. That's what the Basic Education Funding Commission and all of its study rules reported on. And that's what we've got to advocate for to make sure it happens. Once again, press star 3 if you've got a question or if you want to participate in the conversation. To get us going, I'm going to ask the Executive Director of the Education Law Center, a good friend, someone that we've worked with for quite some time, to just lead off the conversation and to provide us a bit of a framework on where we are and what needs to get done. And then I'll have our, I should call him our surprise guest, but I'll have our surprise guest on right after Deborah, and he will also add something to the conversation to help get things going. So first and foremost, Deborah Gordon-Claire, the Executive Director of the Education Law Center of Philadelphia. Good evening, Deborah. The telephone is yours.
Okay. Thank you so much, Senator Hughes, and thanks for including me and for talking about this absolutely critical issue, funding our public schools. I'll start by saying Pennsylvania has a long-standing problem in how it funds or does not fund our public schools, which is to say up until the court decision, which I'll very briefly go over, and really up until the Basic Education Funding Commission's report, there has not been a goal of fully funding schools. And so the state hasn't. And there has been a very, a relatively low state contribution. So in all states, public schools are funded by a combination of a little bit from the federal government and a combination of state and local funds. And Pennsylvania's kind of flipped as to how we do it here. In most states, the state provides most of the funding and a local share is a smaller amount. Here in Pennsylvania, there's a relatively low state contribution. And so a child's education is really dependent on local wealth. That leads to huge inequities between districts. And we know that so many of our Black and Brown students are across Pennsylvania are concentrated in low-wealth districts underfunded by the state. So we have this situation where low-wealth communities need the most, are trying the hardest, they're taxing themselves at a high rate, but it's not generating what they need locally, and so they do not have access to quality public schools. That was the reality in Pennsylvania when we filed our lawsuit against the state in 2014. The Education Law Center, along with a public interest law center and a private law firm who did it pro bono called O'Melveny. And we represented 6 school districts across the state, as well as the NAACP Pennsylvania State Conference and the Pennsylvania Association of Rural and Small Schools, and parents in Wilkes-Barre, William Penn, and right here in Philadelphia. Because this is a statewide problem. It is hugely impacting our students in Philadelphia, but also all over the Commonwealth, rural, urban, suburban, and all geographical locations here. And we filed this case under both the Education Clause and the Equal Protection Provisions of the Pennsylvania Constitution. And over a 4-month trial, we had a lot of evidence with witnesses from Philadelphia and all over talking about the realities. Here in Philadelphia, a high school where it rains into the classroom, classrooms with windowless, that are windowless storage rooms, a superintendent from another school district talked about her elementary school that had 1,200 children and 2 reading specialists and no math specialists for the whole school. And experts talking about what I know everyone on this call already knows, the reality that money matters. And when we invest in public schools, our children and our communities do better. So very exciting. Almost exactly 1 year ago, it'll be next Wednesday, 1 year ago, February 7th, 2023, we get this historic landmark decision from Commonwealth Court finding that education is a fundamental right and that the way the state has been funding schools is unconstitutional. So that was a huge win, and really that opinion and that decision has the potential to change the trajectory for generations of students in Pennsylvania. But as those of you who follow the law might know, something like having a decision is really important, but then having it implemented and having a remedy is really what's going to make a difference in the classroom. So that takes us up through this fall when the Basic Education Funding Commission, which Senator Hughes did an excellent job advocating on and sitting on this fall, had hearings all across the Commonwealth, listening to people from all over Pennsylvania, including right here in Philadelphia, to really hear additional evidence in addition to the case of what our schools need. And a purpose of the commission is really to help come up with the remedy. We won, now what, right? So how do we change the way we fund schools? How do we create a constitutionally compliant way to fund schools? And the Basic Education Funding Commission said, well, here's a report with our ideas. And Senator Hughes, you could weigh in on this too, because I know you spent many hours working on this, but I'll just say that highlights of the report acknowledge that the school districts are underfunded by $5.4 billion. And then the state's obligation of that 5.4, the state share should be $5.1 billion of that needed funding to finally close the adequacy gaps that exist and give schools the resources they need to ensure student success. The report spelled out a timeline for delivering those funds, said 7 years, and recommended a new state commitment to help school districts finally fix crumbling and antiquated facilities. That could be the subject of the next town hall, because Senator Hughes has really been a champion on the need for additional support and funding to improve our facilities. And so, you know, the report isn't perfect, and there are pieces I think we would love to see moving forward addressed, like facilities in pre-K in a more specific way. But overall, if fully implemented, the recommendations will make a life-changing difference for our students. And that takes us to today, where we're just a couple days ahead of the governor's budget address, and we're really hoping that this spring we'll see real movement in Harrisburg to make a difference in our schools right here in Philadelphia.
Deb, thank you very much for helping us with that overall perspective of, as I said, maybe the most important, definitely the most important civil rights issue of our time. Fair, constitutional and adequate funding of our schools. I'm now going to turn over to I told you we had a special guest, Reginald Streeter, who is the president of the school board for the School District of Philadelphia, and a product of Philadelphia Public Schools, and a very successful, hardworking attorney who's given up a lot of time on this mission, on this fight for the education of our children. And I'm going to ask Chairman Streeter, President Streeter, I like that, President Streeter, that sounds good, Reg. All right, what would it be like if we're successful in this fight in Harrisburg to build off of the good work that you, the entire team, Dr. Watlington, everybody have been doing to transform our schools, what would this influx of dollars mean for the school district in Philadelphia? Reg?
Yeah, so, I mean, first, I think I will, selfishly say, but, I mean, in a good way, that it would actually take a lot of stress off of the board. I serve with 8 amazing women. I'm the only male, and they've allowed me the opportunity, they've granted me the opportunity to be the chair, the president. But in saying that, often we feel like we have to rob Peter to pay Paul for things that are infuriating to us, things that we believe that our students, our babies deserve. And it shouldn't matter whether you live on one side of, City Avenue or not, right? Or whether you live on one side of Cheltenham Avenue or not, these things should be, bona fide, and the gravamen or what has to, all children in Philadelphia should get. And kind of to talk about kind of what those things are, I mean, you can't talk about it without talking about our goals and guardrails. So quick little history lesson, when we got local control back, which I think is the beginning of the Board of Education even knowing how to spend said funds, we had to create a mechanism to figure out what is the best way to support students. And we engaged with the community, we went to Harvard, we engaged with other stakeholders, we engaged with academics, and we came up with the goals and guardrails, the ones that are tailored to Philadelphia. When I started talking about these, you're going to say, oh yeah, you're going to need money to fund these things. So obviously, why do we exist as a public school institution, right? An institution to educate the whole child. But to do that, you got to do what? Children have to read on grade level, right, or be proficient. You need to also be proficient in math. And they have to be college and career ready. Those are our goals. But what are the things that are the wraparound services or the wraparound, the hugs that you have to give the students? You got to have welcoming and supportive schools. See, these things, I'm already talking about things that cost money, right, that cost resources. And not just resources in the one time, I mean sustained resources, right? Not just a one time infusion of cash, just what we got with the federal government, which is sad to say some of those funds are going to sunset. These are things you need in perpetuity, I would argue. And then guardrails too is enriching and well-rounded school experiences. So extracurriculars, libraries, math, I mean not libraries, but dance, intramural sports, things that students right outside the city of Philadelphia can engage in that we can't engage in with, because if we did, we wouldn't be good stewards of public dollars. And we don't want to find ourselves back in a position where we lose local control again, right? If we all have PTSD from that. And then, partnering with parents and family members. That's another thing that costs resources and time to do and to do it well. And then obviously we want to make sure we think about equity, addressing racist practices. But I'll even get more granular as to the things we would do that Dr. Wallington and the school and the Board of Education through the Accelerate Philly strategic plan require funding. And a few things that kind of touch and concern those things. One, relaunching our parent university. It is so important for the board, School District of Philadelphia, for our teachers, for our parents, for our students, to have for the district to have a mechanism where it can help educate, help bring parents along on things such as the new curriculum, the new math curriculum, right? I'm doing math for my child, and I'm like, I got to go back and see how they're doing math now, because they're not doing the right math in any way like we used to do, right? But that takes resources, right? And be the parents where they are. Piloting extended day, right, and year-round schools. What does that look like? You also, it takes resources to think about doing that, and resources to go get the engagement with the community to ensure that it's something that the community is ready for in the way that they want it. Even though we know our esteemed mayor has kind of given us the North Star where we're headed.
Yeah.
Facility improvements, right? We want more capacities in PM Pierce's, right? But we also want to preserve and retrofit our historical and beautiful buildings. To me, if you look at our buildings, at one point, we did care about education, because if you try to build these buildings now, they'd be really expensive. They're ornate. There's precious resources in there, precious stones and things like that. We need resources to be able to retrofit them for the learning experience that our children need now. So I just mentioned the math curriculum. By the way, this is the first time that we bought curriculum. It was very expensive, but it's the best curriculum in America for students to aspire in math. But it's like a group thing, right? It's a different way of teaching math. Our classrooms are retrofitted for the old kind of Prussian model of education, where you're preparing people to go work on a assembly line and they sit in rows. But now we have curriculum that inspires students to work in groups. We need classrooms that are built to ensure that students can easily exceed the expectations of children who need to do that. And we also want to do things like offer music, right? It's not just about buying instruments. You have to have facilities that are acoustically sound, that are equipped with the tools necessary to even have a proper music program that's throughout the whole district, not just at a few schools. We want to also recruit and retain our teachers, right? And principals. That costs money and resources as well, right? Job training, CTE. I can go on and on. AP courses, algebra before high school and every middle school. Athletics, libraries, state path programs, keeping our babies safe in any streets, more access to foreign languages, leveling with not having to mitigating the need to do leveling, which I know is a four-letter word to somebody, when we have to remove resources out of a school because it appears that the population of the school is going down, which can still have deleterious effects on the community, on the school, the parent students that are there, academic specialists, which we spoke about earlier. And this is the ability to build a central office that can better support and serve our schools. Sorry, your brother had to get it all out.
No, that's good, because we need to hear all of that, because people are asking the question, if you get the resources, what will they be invested in? What will they do? And before we start taking questions, and remember, folks, press star 3 if you want to ask a question. One little trip to, if you will, the house that Kobe built in Lower Merion High School, all right? And you can see what a 21st century school looks like, all right? The resources that exist there, the student-teacher ratio that exists there, the up-to-date modern equipment and facility that doesn't have lead, doesn't have asbestos, things like that. That is what a 21st century school building looks like. Now, we're on the path to getting those things in Philadelphia. You mentioned the Cassidy School, hopefully in June or in September of this year. That school will be brand new, but it's just the remodeling, the refurbishing, the reinvention of the Pierce School in North Philadelphia. Those are examples of what can be done locally if we have the resources. And every school should be a great school. And because our students deserve it, our families deserve it, and for this community to move forward, it must have it. So for our listeners, we want you to press star 3. We want you to press star 3. So if you want to get in the queue and ask a question, we're going to start opening up for the questions, but the website, the first website we want folks to make sure that they lock into is paschoolswork.org, paschoolswork.org. I'm going to say it 3 times, paschoolswork.org. President Streeter, the School District of Philadelphia website. where we can see all of this. Can you give us, tell us quickly what that website is?
Give me 1 second. I got you, though. 1 second.
I know we're looking at
a website for the Accelerate Philly right now, too. So if you go to Philly.org, if you just Google Accelerate Philly, School District for Philadelphia, it'll take you to all the resources. And if you look at the Accelerate Philly 5-year plan, those are all things that the School District of Philadelphia will use those funds for.
Right. If the basic website for the school the basic website for the School District of Philadelphia is philasd.org, and then you can find everything you need to find going out from there. And I'm sure based on some of the calls that I see coming in, folks have some ideas and thoughts about how to move this process forward and get their information out there. Jessica, we're asking people to press *3. We're asking people to press *3. *3 if you want to get your question in. Why don't we open up the lines for our two guests, Deborah Clare from the Education Law Center and Reginald Streeter, the president of the board for the School District of Philadelphia. Jessica, who's up first?
First, we have Stacy from Roxborough. Stacy, you are
What's up, Stacy? How are you, Stacy?
I'm great, Senator Vincent Hughes and your guests. And thank you so much, Senator, for having these type of town halls. I really appreciate when you do this. My question is, I wanted to know, since the court handed down the verdict, the judgment that Philadelphia schools aren't being funded correctly, when do you think that some type of the money will come to the schools? When will something start happening for the schools? Because the judgment was passed down that the money hasn't been right for years, but the schools are still languishing. And when do you think that Philadelphia schools will be able to bring back more nurses and more librarians and then bring back some of the art programs that help children stay out of trouble? Our schools are languishing, and where I was raised in Chestnut Hill, the schools are still doing good, but when I moved to Roxborough, they are starting to go down. So I wanted to know, when do you think some of this funding will come to Philadelphia? Because it's not happening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stacey. I'll start it off, and then I'll turn it over to our guests. The important thing that I want folks to remember now throughout this conversation and going forward, we had a very important court ruling in February of 2023. We had very important work coming out of the Basic Education Funding Commission that was announced, I guess it was January of 2024. Now we have to appropriate the funds out of Harrisburg to get to these schools to make the investments that the schools deserve to have. And that is the state's budget process, which begins this coming Tuesday, February 6th. This coming Tuesday, when the governor makes his budget proposal and says to the legislature and to everybody in Pennsylvania, this is what we want the state, this is what I want the state's money to be spent on. Now, he is saying to us, and he said publicly and privately, that we should look for a major investment from Harrisburg in his budget proposal. We're not going to get all this money done all in 1 year. It's going to take a number of years, probably, hopefully no longer than 7, but maybe quicker than that, but hopefully no longer than 7, to get to adequacy and to get to constitutionality. But what we have to fight for is to make sure the governor's budget proposal is strong, and then once it comes out from him, then make sure that the legislature keeps it strong, and if it can, make it even stronger, and that's got to be done by June 30th of this year. So it starts on Tuesday, and it flows all the way through until June 30th of 2024. Dad, I know you're getting ready to jump in there real quick. What do you have?
Yeah, well, I can give some specifics on the numbers, and also I just want to say, completely agree with you, you know, we need funding so we can have school librarians and school nurses and arts and all the other things we know kids need. It's not rocket science. Like, we actually do know what kids need to learn. We just need the funding to provide it. And so under the analysis in the Basic Education Funding Commission's report shows that Philadelphia has an adequacy gap of $1.4 billion. So if that were to be distributed, that adequacy investment, you know, one-seventh of it this year, that'd be $203 million more dollars for the school district on the adequacy investment. And then the commission report also recommended at least $200 million per year overall in basic education funding increase. And of that, $40 million would be expected to go to the school district. So if the governor's budget proposal matches the Basic Education Funding Commission's recommendation for year one, the school district would see $243 million increase over what they're getting now. And just by way of comparison, last year's increase was a little over $85 million. So that would be, I think, a really important way to show we're serious about a remedy, show we're serious about getting into constitutional compliance, and show we're serious about getting the school district the funding that it needs. So I can't promise that. I don't know what's going to be in the budget proposal next week, but I do know that it will require everyone who's on this call and beyond to be advocating this spring to ensure that the legislature passes a June 30th budget that has numbers close to that for districts like Philadelphia.
Reginald Streeter, what would you do with an extra $240 million coming into the school district of Philadelphia in 1 year?
I mentioned many of those things earlier. First, I want to talk about how it's very important for the district and the board to have long-term, recurring, and predictable funding. It is so key. We are mandated by the law to not even present budgets that are based upon, we have to present budgets that are based upon expected funds coming in from the state and the city. So you can't even propose imaginary budgets. So, but we have done the work. And I think, again, it's the strategic plan, right? It's you know, being able to put the librarians back if necessary, learning supports, mental health supports. We all know our children need those things as well. We'll also be able to do things such as move faster on our facilities, right, and do things to modernize our buildings in a way where our children can best be served. But Dr. Wallinson talked a lot about the number one thing that is the number one driver for student achievement and educating the whole child is that it's to recruit and retain highly qualified, well-supported teachers. And for our teachers to be well-supported, we have the resources to do it. So, again, I'm not saying that everything will turn over overnight, that we'll be, you know, Rockefeller rich, as Dr. Hollingson says, overnight, and then therefore have the outcomes that show that, because, you know, it's not just 20 years of underfunding. We're talking about decades upon decades upon decades of underfunding.
Generations.
We're trying to catch up to it, so, yeah.
All right, that's a good answer. Jessica, who's next? Remember, folks, press *3 if you want to get a call in. Jessica, who's next?
Next, we have Yvette from West Philly. Yvette, you are live.
Hey, good evening. Senator Hughes, I forgot your name. But blame it on the age. My question is, if y'all do get this funding, if y'all do get this funding, the problem I'm seeing in the Philadelphia School District is once these kids get in high school and they have IEPs, the IEPs seem like they don't follow them once they get in high school. They get in high school, they get to change their classes, the kids get so lost and confused, and when they start selling, that's when they call the parents. They don't call the parents during the school year and everything when they get lost in the beginning. They wait until it's the last resource to reach out to the parent. Where are the IEP teachers? Where are the resources that come in that checks on these kids? That's the purpose of having an IEP, right? For y'all to stay on top of them and continue the resources they get during first through eighth. Then when they get in high school, they're lost. I need answers. I have an 11th grader. I need answers. It confuses me. It only gets done if I have to step in myself and come there and sit in the classroom with them. I need help. That's the, yeah.
I'll start. Reginald Street, and maybe jump in right afterwards. If we're successful, and that's the collective we, to fight for these resources and to make them become a reality, the district then is in a position to bring more people into the school buildings, into the classrooms, to be supportive at the early grades and into the older grades. The funding is fundamental to get the resources necessary. The same resources that they have in the suburban school district, we have to have here. If we're successful getting the funding in, then we can ramp up the services so that every child has access to the quality service that they need to have. Right now, it's a bit of a strain. Reginald, you go ahead. You go ahead and take over, sir.
Yeah, I think that this is just a perfect example of how the funding can drive resources and where they're allocated. And districts that are well-resourced, from my understanding, every school or more schools are equipped to take a student with an IEP. We're often forced to bus our students out of their neighborhood, which I'm being told is triggering and traumatic for a student who probably needs to be around the same people instead of being shipped all over the city to find the appropriate place where we have the resources there to meet their needs. We can't do that if we're not fully funded, right? This is an onion with so many layers that are interrelated. And then on top of that, we've recently done an audit around our staffing, and it is true that districts of our size spend about 6% of their budget on central staff. Central 440 is built and intended to support, but it's half the size that it should be. We only spend 3% of our budget because we're trying to push more resources out to the schools. So it's a both and, right? So I think that's the kind of, I appreciate the question because it allows us to kind of really talk about how this thing is very interrelated, and funding can drive some of this stuff.
And I'll just add, if you want to get granular, the Education Law Center, the organization where I work, has a lot of rights-based information on our website. We have a back-to-school guide for Pennsylvania students and families with specific information about what your rights are as a student with a disability. So hopefully it's written in accessible language that you can also look at if you go to our website, elc-pa.org. And also the School District of Philadelphia has an Office of Specialized Services that you could also contact. And I recognize your question was less about the individual and more about the systemic issue. The systemic issue, I think we definitely need to talk about funding and the needs of the district, but in terms of the individual needs, I recommend both the resources on our website at elc-pa.org and also philasd.org/specialized services.
These are all important websites that I want folks to make sure that they have, they utilize, take advantage of, and equally as important, if you have a personal issue, if a circumstance or situation that you're confronting with your child in a situation where they need to get the additional support, or you're concerned about the support that they're getting, do not hesitate to call our office, 215-879-7777, 215-879-7777, or visit our website, SenatorHughes.com, SenatorHughes.com, to make sure that we are aware of it and we can help you navigate the process, navigate the system. Website, paschoolswork.org. If you want to get in the fight, paschoolswork.org. If you want to get in the fight, paschoolswork.org. You know, we had one of the largest increases in education funding in this last budget, and even though that was good, it's still not enough. It still doesn't track what we need to have to get us to constitutionality and adequacy within a 5 to 7 year period. That's what the Basic Education Funding Commission talked about. We got to be involved. We got to be connected. We got to be advocating. Jessica, who's next?
Next we have Tom. Tom, you are live.
Hey, Tom.
Hi, Senator Hughes. Thanks for having the town hall. I have a friend who's a teacher, and he teaches sixth grade, and I was absolutely appalled when he told me his kids, first of all, they're very disruptive, and they're doing everything they can not to learn, and second of all, the reading level is from K to 2. So we basically got sixth graders who are basically illiterate. What will be done to address that?
Raj, I'm going to give that to you, sir.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's already being addressed, and I appreciate the question. I think, again, because the Board of Education has a laser focus, and we're one of the few school boards in America that does it the way we do it, with the intensity that we do. We track this data, right? And we don't just sit at it and throw rocks at it. You say, what are you going to do, the good brother, Dr. Robinson? And he does things about it. That's why right now, in the school district, we're tracking 17 things, and of those 13 things, some of them are on the up and up, right? So 13 out of 17 things are on up and up. So work is being done right now. So, and another thing I want to just highlight for the School of Philadelphia is that of large urban school districts, the School of Philadelphia had the least, we had learning loss, but the least learning loss than other school districts, some of them rural and suburban, because we focused on reading. So yes, we do understand that we have some issues. I'm not going to blame the children. The School Board of Education looks at each other and looks at the adults and say, what are we going to do better? And what we've done also is we've tried to funnel the resources that we have to those things as well. And I think we're seeing the fact that we have that laser focus, especially while we have the additional funds from the federal government, you can see how what happens when we focus. So we don't run away from issues. We attack them, and we're transparent about them, and we put the data up for the whole city to see whether we're doing better or we're doing worse.
So, Tom, let me say this. The issue of grade level reading, something that we spent a lot of time working on, if you want to try to get some extra personal help to some of these students, call our office, 215-879-7777. But equally as important, go to a website to this organization called readtosucceedphiladelphia.com. Read the number 2, succeedphiladelphia.com. I'm going to say it one more time so that everybody can write it down and lock it in. Read the number 2, succeedphiladelphia.com. It's a program that we started many years ago, and it's had a very significant impact on children reading at grade level and even advancing their reading, so they're reading beyond grade level. You go to readtosucceedphiladelphia.com, and you will get access to resources to help any student in their issues around grade level reading. It's an important issue, one that we must address, and fundamentally must make a priority. I'm sorry. Jessica, who's the next person we want to talk to?
Next we have Terry from East Falls. Terry, you are live.
Hello.
Hey, Terry.
How's everyone this evening?
Great. How are you?
Pretty good. I have a question to ask, and I just want to know when did they decide to take, like, teacher's aides out of the classrooms? Because I remember when I was growing up, we had teacher's aides in our school helping the teachers, because if you have like 20, even 20 students, that's a lot of children to have to attend to from one person. You know, they used to have teacher aides, and a lot of the aides were like people from the community, like people's grandmoms, people's moms, you know, and the children were accountable to these people because they were family of their peers. You know, so they had a lot of success with that. You know, and I just think that it's like is what the other person said about the children with the illiterate can't even read. There's so many children that cannot read. You know, 13, you know, 12. That's sad. And there's so many children on IEPs. Why is that?
So I will start and then Deborah can get in and Reginald, of course, can get in as well. One of the huge problems in the reduction when there was a very dramatic budget cut in education funding in the beginning of the Tom Corbett administration, so that's, 12, 13 years ago, is $1 billion cut out of education funding in a situation where already the schools were underfunded. Then Corbett came in, he cut out $1 billion in education. Thousands of teachers and educators and these teacher assistants during that time, Terry, they were laid off, they were fired, they were dismissed. And what's been happening over the years is to slowly try to build that back up. And when we get the extra money that we deserve to have, I'm going to say it a third time, that we deserve to have, then we'll be able to fill out that complement. And I know Reginald Streeter and Dr. Watson and the folks of the school district have been trying to build those resources back up, build that support staff back up. Reg, I want to turn it over to you to just give us a quick update on how that process has been going. And Deb, if you want to add a little bit more to the history. Reginald Streeter, I'm sorry.
Yes, sir. I'm happy to put a little context to you. Right, so I think what people don't understand is that when that happened, we had the school district of Philadelphia was gutted. You had principals answering our own phones. There's no administrative assistance. You had teachers being fired, teachers' aides being fired. 440, the place that actually supports the schools, was gutted, right? And we have yet to rebuild public education in Philadelphia. We're doing it now. So the good thing about Dr. Wallington is he's come here and he's actually given us a checkup, right? And he's saying, oh, your alternator is not even there, sir. And so like, when you hear that kind of from Dr. Wallington, it lets me know that we've been pressing the gas on moving at 100 miles an hour in our car. And I'm amazed that we've been able to, you know, get where we are now, right? So with that being said, I just think it's important for everybody to understand that your frustration all comes back to funding, right? I'm with you. I'm on the same side that you are on, that it is a travesty that the powers that be watch the school district get gutted and bludgeoned and almost, you know, left in the ditch somewhere. And now you're still waiting for the funding, and I'm so appreciative that it's coming. So, but as far as the piece around ensuring that we have access to teachers and teacher supports, the good brother Dr. Watlington is thinking outside the box, creating a middle college where we can actually educate our own students, and then they will come back and teach in the school district of Philadelphia. Again, reinvigorating the parent academy. I mean, that's a huge component to ensuring that we can bring back the parents and bring back the caretakers so that our children can be accountable to them. So that's just an example of a few things, but we are still rebuilding our system, and considering the things that were taken out, I'm amazed that we're even having the gains that we're having now, and that's because of our teachers, that's because of people like you, the caller who called us, who cares, the good brother Senator Hughes, the Education Law Center. It's been a village effort, but now we've shown we can do with less. It's time to give us more.
It is, if I remember correctly, Deb, you can help me here, Reginald, obviously you as well. When that huge budget cut happened in the first year of the Corbett administration, I think there were about 22 schools in the school district of Philadelphia had to shut down. If I remember correctly, it was about 22. It could have been even more. And it was a very devastating period. Yeah, it was a very devastating period. We're obviously focused on Philadelphia, but it was an issue that was felt all across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Deborah Gordon-Claire, you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, I guess I would just underscore the realities of what happens when you are a district that is $1.4 billion underfunded. That is the adequacy gap. So, you know, and that's not even facilities. Like, we haven't even talked about you know, the classrooms are draining inside. That is the cost just to get our students what they need in the classrooms. You know, $1.4 billion is a big number. And so, as a result, the district has made choices that are really hard choices that have not benefited kids. And you know, you're forced to make these horrible choices when you are deprived of what you need.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Reginald. Jess, who's up next? Who's up next, Jess?
Next, we have Milton. Milton, you are live.
Hi, Senator Vincent Hughes. This is Milton McKay.
Hey, Milton, how are you?
I'm doing great. My question, I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but how much of the funding is going towards trade schools and hiring of tradesmen for the Philadelphia School District?
I'll start and I'll let Reginald Streeter jump in. I believe we get these resources in that we'll be able to expand the trade programs inside the schools so that more young people have access and opportunity to learn those trades, to learn those trades, to learn how to be an electrician, to learn how to be a plumber, to learn how to be a carpenter, to learn all of those high-level skills. I know some of that is happening now, but we get those extra resources in, we can dramatically expand that to give everybody an opportunity to learn what it is that they want to learn, that they can learn, that they need to learn. Reginald, where are we at with the trade programs inside our school?
Yeah, we call them CTE now, and we have a very a very, very robust CTE program. And we have a lot of programming, whether a student wants to be a barber, a cosmetologist, wants to be a nurse. And now, you know, we have a quasi-middle college if you want to be a teacher, right? So there's a lot of work going on. But the problem is that what we're finding is those tradesmen, and by the way, tradesmen are the ones who teach our children in the CTE space. They need the type of professional development that a traditional teacher would need. And that takes money and resources, and it comes right back down to funding. You can be great at teaching someone how to do something with plumbing, but if you don't know the pedagogical way of doing it with a young person and also how math and science interacts with that, not only will you might not be able to teach the student the skills they need, but that student might not pass the industry standard stuff like the NOCTI, which is a predictor of whether a student can pass the type of test that you still got to know how to read and write to do. So, again, this whole thing is interwoven, but we have a very robust CTE program.
And if you go to the Philadelphia School District website and just search around a little bit, you'll see where those opportunities are. But as President Streeter has indicated, we need to be in the business of expanding those opportunities and making sure that trades issues, along with other kinds of programs that motivate a child. You know, every child learns differently. Every child learns differently. And, you know, one child may be excited about music. Another child may be excited about the life sciences and chemistry and biology. Another child may be excited about being a carpenter. Or another child might be excited about being a barber and working in a beauty salon and doing hair and makeup and all that kind of stuff. You know, we have to have a robust program which requires the money that our skilled children and our schools have been deserving to have for generations. Now that opportunity is in front of us, and we got to be in the business advocating for it. Because if we don't advocate for it, why do we expect anyone else to advocate for it? Jess, I know we're on the clock. The time is running short. Who's next?
Next, we have Jerry from West Florida. Jerry, you are live.
Hey, Jerry.
Hi. Hello. First of all, thank you. Thank you so much for this platform. And you guys kind of already touched on what I early on was thinking about as far as what programs, what we need to try to, you know, implement for the students, such as arts and music, which, you know, makes for a well-rounded individual. I think it's really important, and I'm glad to see that that's on the agenda.
Jerry, I have to say this, and thank you for your call. I'm going to say this, everybody, and I've said this publicly, I said this to the governor, to everybody. Every time you see a violent situation, a carjacking, a shooting, or something like that, I can pretty much guarantee you that that person that was involved in that incident likely became out of an underfunded school that did not have the resources that those children deserved to have, that was unconstitutional and inadequately funded. I can pretty much guarantee you, if you trace it all the way back, it goes directly to the fact that they did not get the education, that they were unconstitutionally denied, because someone didn't believe enough to treat them and educate in them adequately and constitutionally. So we have got to jump on this if we think that this is going to impact the whole community and make our neighborhood safer and make them cleaner and provide more economic vitality to our families and our communities. We must jump on it. We cannot sleep this one. Jessica, it's 6:59. I'm going to let you get one more in, and then we're going to have to wrap it up, all right?
All right, we are going to go to Sharita in West Philly. Sharita, you are live.
Good evening, Senator.
Hey, Sharita.
I was calling, I was listening earlier when you was mentioned, you mentioned the governor's proposal and making sure that he submits the right proposal. And I was just wondering, how can we support the governor in this decision-making, or at least make our voice is heard so that he is taking all of these things into consideration when he's drawing up this proposal?
Well, his proposal is due on next Tuesday, February 6th. And that's what we need to be paying really close attention to. It's been reported about it a lot. I'm going to turn it over to Deborah Clare, and she can speak a little bit more about some of the rallies and activities that are being planned around that time frame. Yes?
Yes, thank you so much. So that's right. The governor will deliver his budget address on Tuesday, February 6th, and we hope he'll stand by, our students, and his representatives on the commission voted for the report, and then soon thereafter, the legislature will begin its budget hearing process throughout the spring. And so there'll be many opportunities for advocates, for all of you listening, to join us in Harrisburg or from your home and calling people who are in Harrisburg, as we look towards the end of June to hope to see a budget and school code amendments that really institutionalize this plan so that underfunded school districts know that they will be getting financial relief and that they can rely on the predictable recurring funding streams from the state. And so on Tuesday is the budget address. On Wednesday, many of us will be in Harrisburg for the one-year anniversary of the court decision. We'll be having different advocates read pieces of the decision. If that's something you're interested, I hope you'll join us in Harrisburg on Wednesday. But even if you can't join us in Harrisburg on Wednesday, calling the governor's office, calling your legislators to tell them that you support fair funding, I think is critical. Senator Hughes is already a champion for our public school children, and we are lucky to have him advocating in Harrisburg. And he has a lot of colleagues who would love to hear from you, too, in terms of the importance of supporting our students and our public schools.
Let me just say, and thank you, Deb, I really do appreciate that. One of our good friends and colleagues who is a champion for public education, Representative Tarek Khan, is on the call. He texted me, and he's listening in intensely. He's hearing what everybody has to say. There are a number of legislators that are really supportive, legislators and senators are really supportive, but everybody's not there. Everybody's not there, and that's why your voice matters. Your voice and your vote matters in this conversation. The more people who are engaged, the more people involved, the greater opportunity there will be for success in terms of getting the funding that our children and our communities deserve to have that they've been denied, largely because of color. I say it a third time, largely because of the color of their skin, they've been denied this opportunity. And now, with a court decision that ruled in our favor, with a funding commission that said, yep, that's the deal and this is what we need to do. The governor's got the first attempt at it with his proposal, and then it'll be on the legislators to either support his proposal all the way through, to tweak it, to increase it, but to make sure that we get the resources necessary that our school children deserve to have. So listen up, family. PASchoolsWork.org. PASchoolsWork.org. I'm going to say it a third time. PASchoolsWork.org is the website that you want to go to if you want to get in the fight. If you want to learn all the information, if you want to get in the fight. If you want to find out what's happening at the Philadelphia School District, go to philasd.org, philasd.org. Reginald Streeter, the president of the school board, has done an excellent job informing us about what is happening and what could happen if they get the funding that they deserve to have here in the School District of Philadelphia. So, Jessica, first of all, Deborah Gordon-Clair, thank you very much from the Education Law Center of Philadelphia. Thank you very much. We appreciate you. We'll see you next week in Harrisburg and probably talk to you beforehand. All right?
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Reginald Streeter, my good friend, my brother, thank you so much for your contributions both on this call and your commitment to the children. Folks don't know. You don't get paid for this extra work that you're putting in. At least you don't get paid financially. I know you get rewarded from seeing those bright stars every day. And I must call out the young lady who sang Lift Every Voice and Sing at the presentation made at the High School for Creative and Performing Arts. I know who sang it the best of all time, my wife, at the Super Bowl last year. I know that.
Right.
But I heard that young lady, that high school student sing it, yesterday morning. I said, uh-oh, there's some competition here. Some competition here. So, Reginald Streeter, thank you very much, bro. I appreciate you, man. All right?
I appreciate you, too. More than you know.
Okay. All right, Jessica, this has been a great conversation. Again, I'd like to thank all our guests for joining us on this important dialogue. The actions of legislators in the coming months will determine the quality of education and the preparedness we can provide our students in the Commonwealth. We must ensure they are treated and served equally under the law. Our children are just as important, just as great, just as fabulous, just as special, and just as deserving as any other child in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Thanks to our listeners for participating in our telephone town hall. If you didn't have a chance to ask a question, please remain on the line. You'll be able to leave your question on a voicemail for me, and we'll get back to you. Thanks again for your participation. If you have any additional questions or concerns, please call my office in Philadelphia at 215-879-7777 or simply visit my website, senatorhughes.com. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.